I don't have long to get this down. Whatever it is that's happening to me is happening quickly. And if I put the telling of this story off any longer, I don't think I'll be able to tell it at all. Not that it matters much. What took place in the cave isn't the kind of thing people are going to believe. Not even close. They'll think I'm making it up for attention, or they'll just think I'm sick in the head. It doesn't matter. I have to try. If something does happen to me, or worse, if something happens to the people around me, maybe others will listen then. Maybe this story will be a warning. But if I'm honest, the time for warnings may have already passed. It happened on my honeymoon, New Zealand. If I had more time, I'd tell you all about New Zealand. I'd tell you about the wide open landscapes and the turquoise lakes that sparkle at the foot of the craggy mountains. But I can't go into all that now. I can't afford to get sidetracked. This isn't that kind of story. What happened to me happened deep in the fjordland. A jungly, glacier-chiseled strip of coast that looked like something from the Jurassic period. It happened in the Glowworm Caves near Te Anau. The Glowworm Caves are a must-visit. That's what everybody says. It's what my wife and I read as we were carving a path down through the South Island in our motorhome on our way to Milford Sound. And because we were in no particular rush to reach our end destination, we decided to pay them a visit. I remember that day vividly. The details stand out like lights in the dark. I remember parking up in Te Anau and filling onto the boat with a bunch of other tourists. I remember being damp from the rain. I remember staring out of the steamed window as we cruised through the fjords, half listening as our tour guide spouted muffled facts through a microphone. When we reached the island the caves were on, we split into smaller groups, about 10 or 15 of us, each with our own guide. Ours yelled instructions at us over the crash of a waterfall, then ducked through a dripping brown opening in the rock face. The atmosphere changed as soon as we were inside those caves. There had been a lot of talking and laughter on the boat ride, but it stopped almost as soon as we entered the crevasse. Darkness and shadows took over. Sounds echoed, water crashed and roared through the fissures around us, while tiny lights illuminated our dim passage through the rocks. I could no longer clearly make out the faces of the people in the group. Everything was in a kind of half-light. We wound along a grated walkway, peering into the cracks and recesses while our footfalls clanged on wet metal. Soon, we were forced into a single file by a particularly narrow stretch of tunnel. My wife and I ended up at the back. "Watch your heads through this bit, guys," a guide's voice echoed somewhere up ahead of us. I stooped low, tracing one hand against the hard, wet ceiling above me, fixing my eyes on my wife's back. "Tight, isn't it?" Laura must not have heard me, because she didn't respond. Really, I'd been thinking out loud anyway, talking to distract myself from the nagging claustrophobia that was already starting to creep in. I've never liked narrow spaces. I needn't have worried too much, though, because it wasn't long before the passage opened up again. In a few paces, we went from a 5-foot-high tunnel to a narrow, ceilingless cut. Darkness stretched above our heads, concealing the cavern's roof. The sudden height made me almost dizzy. "Keep in line, guys, and don't wander off. They don't pay me enough to come looking for you if you get lost," our guide, a messy-haired local who briefly introduced himself as Mike when we were gathered outside the cave entrance, sounded as though he was getting further and further away, moving off into the distance up ahead. Although this section of the cave was high, the path was still narrow, and everyone had been forced to walk in single file. Laura's feet echoed along the walkway in front of me, water dripping. Lights either side of the trail cast giant shadows on the walls. I turned my head, an instinct making me glance back the way we'd come, but there was no one behind me. The walkway wound back through the cave, empty by the shadows. I didn't like being at the back. It sounds stupid, but I felt vulnerable in a way. Observed. They'd made the cavern as tourist-friendly as possible, but I was still aware of the little fissures and cracks that hollowed out the rock on either side of me, veins snaking off from the main artery. I was also aware of just how old this place was. Ancient, in fact. I had the sense that we'd stepped into somewhere that had been closed off to humans for millions of years, only to be opened up again like an old wound. Walking through the clammy darkness, I shivered. Let's just see the damn glowworms already and get out. I picked up my pace. I'd been staring down at my trainers, watching where I was putting my feet, and when I glanced up again, I saw Laura disappearing around a bend up ahead. I was falling behind, too caught up in my own thoughts. I felt an itch down the back of my neck, and I glanced behind me, but there was nobody there. You're getting paranoid, mate. I faced forward again. The path in front of me was now empty. Laura must have rounded the turn ahead. Black rock reared up on either side of the narrow track. Water dripped. I could no longer hear the guide or my group. Only faint echoes. I shivered again, picked up my pace some more. A droplet of water fell on the back of my neck, and it was only when I glanced up towards its source that I saw the figure. I felt myself go cold. The stranger was a long way up above me, half hidden in the shadows, perched on a little shelf of rock. I could see his shape and his dangling legs, but I couldn't make out any facial features, only the eyes. I could make those out easily enough. The figure above the path had incredibly bright blue eyes, and they pierced through the darkness towards me like stars. Now, I'd been walking at quite a quick pace when I glanced up, and somehow, despite the shock of seeing a person up there, I hadn't completely frozen. My legs had kept carrying me forwards, running on autopilot, and by the time my brain had registered what I'd seen, I was already past the point where the stranger was sitting. I carried on walking while my thoughts waged war with themselves. You didn't see what you thought you saw. I damn did. I bloody did. There was a man sitting up there. No, it was a trick of the shadows. It was just paranoid and... There's no way it was a trick. I know what I saw up there. I forced myself to stop walking, ignored the itch running down my neck, pulled in a deep breath, braced myself, and then turned to look behind me, angling my head up. Nothing. There was nobody above the path. Nothing. There was nobody above the path. I could just make out the little ledge where I thought I'd seen the figure, but whoever it was had gone. Only shadows remained. Maybe it was a worker, I told myself. It could have just been a staff member up there, doing some work on the caves. A second voice in my mind tried to pipe up and argue with this, but I wouldn't let it. Still feeling uneasy, I filed any doubts away and quickened my pace, trying to catch up with the main group. I walked fast, without looking back. A couple of times, I thought I heard someone behind me on the path, the soft, hasty patter of footsteps. But I told myself it was only the sound of dripping water. The rest of that trip passed like a blur. My wife asked me where I'd been when I finally caught up with her, and I responded by asking her if she'd seen anyone else on the path. She frowned. What, like someone from another group? But before I had a chance to say anything back to her, our guide was speaking again. It seemed we were at the last stage of the tour, the grand finale. A slow running river inside the cavern. A little metal jetty with a boat at the end. Black water, no lights. The plan was for everyone to board the boat, then we'd drift out and look for glowworms overhead. It'll be like looking at tiny blue stars up in the sky, a guide told us. You can't miss them. I could describe that trip for you in detail. I could tell you all about the pitch darkness and the twinkling pinpricks overhead. I won't, though. There really isn't time. All you need to know about the final part of our visit to those caves are two details, two memories. The first was actually more of a sensation than a memory. As we clambered into the boat and drifted off over the black water, I had this sense, a very strong, impossible to shake feeling, that someone was in the boat staring at me. I don't mean another passenger or my wife either. I mean in the thick darkness, I felt like there was a disembodied face hovering inches from my own. So close, I kept imagining breath on my face. The sensation was powerful enough that I spent the entire boat journey in a state of anxiety, jumping at every bump and splash. I was still in this anxious state when one of the other tourists, a Japanese lady, let out a horrible, piercing scream. She screamed, and when the other passengers started to yell and move in panic, she screamed some more. She was still screaming when our guide struggled to help her, and she didn't stop screaming as the boat hurried back to the jetty to call for medical assistance. We found out later that she'd put her hand over the side of the boat, something the guide had clearly warned us not to do, just as we bumped into the side of the cavern. Every one of her fingers had been broken. That night, lying with my wife in the bed of our motorhome, I tried to talk to her about what I'd seen. I tried to make sense of it. "Babe, when we were back in those caverns, did you see anyone else in the tunnels with us?" "Hmm?" Laura was lying with her head on my chest. Her voice was muffled. I could tell she was already half asleep. "In the glowworm's cave, I had this weird moment where I thought I saw some guy sitting above me on a ledge." Laura's head shifted slightly. "Hmm?" "It was when I was at the back and you were a bit further ahead. Water dripped on my neck, and when I looked up, I thought I saw this man sitting in the shadows above the path. It was weird. But then when I looked back up again, he wasn't there anymore. I don't know, I guess I probably just imagined it. But it freaked me out a bit. And then with everything that happened to the woman in the boat, I guess I just..." Laura shifted again. I paused and listened to her breathing. It was regular now, evenly spaced, and I realized she was fast asleep. I'd been talking to myself. I reached up and flicked the lamp above the bed off, trying not to think about what the pitch darkness in the motorhome reminded me of. I leaned back and closed my eyes and attempted to shut off my mind. It was a dripping noise that woke me. A soft, steady plink. Drip. Drip. "Laura?" I struggled to open my eyes and lift my head. "Laura, you left the tap on." But even as I said the words, I felt a fat droplet land on the skin of my forehead. Cold water on my face. My eyes snapped open. I was in the bed of my motorhome, twisted on my side to face my wife. Her eyes were shut, her breathing steady. Darkness surrounded me. The motorhome was a nest of grey-black shadows. I shifted in the duvet, struggling to sit up. Another droplet of water hit my face. Drip. I pushed myself into a sitting position, rubbing water from my eyes. And when I opened them again, I saw a man crouched at the foot of our bed. I screamed. It was the figure from the caves. His face was in shadow, but I recognized him straight away. His eyes burned in the dark like twin blue candle flames. His body was hunched like an animal's. As I stared in horror, he reached forward and placed a hand on the edge of the bed, then lifted himself up and began crawling across the mattress towards me. I shut my eyes and screamed over and over again, just like the lady in the boat had done. And I didn't stop until my wife finally managed to shake me awake. Even after the lights were on and Laura had made me a cup of tea, I still couldn't relax, couldn't get back to sleep. I was unable to shake the feeling that someone was hiding in the darkness outside our motorhome, watching the windows and waiting for us to switch off the lights. I haven't been feeling myself. Not at all. Not since we got back from our honeymoon a couple of days ago. My wife thinks it might be jet lag, or maybe just the post-holiday blues. But I know she's wrong about that. I don't blame her. I haven't told her the full extent of my symptoms. It's not just tiredness or a lack of sleep, although that is part of it. It's not the headaches either. It's not the anxiety that's been burning a hole in my stomach for the past week. All of that contributes, but really, it's the feeling in my head I can't shake. It's like an itch that refuses to be scratched, like there's something on the inside of my skull, some shifting, wriggling presence that I can't get rid of. It makes me think of the glowworms, of what a guy had told us about them. I thought they were just innocent little bugs, but it turns out they're actually quite nasty. Predators. They produce these little, sticky ropes that they dangle from the ceiling of the caves like fish hooks. Then they lie in wait. And when a nice, juicy moth gets tangled up in their trap, they squirm straight down the end of the rope and burrow in the thing's eye. Eat its brain from the inside out. Horrible stuff. I try not to dwell on thoughts like that, but it's hard. Very hard. Lately, it seems like there's a lot of thoughts I can't stop dwelling on. Violent ones, urges, thoughts about hurting myself or hurting people around me, putting a knife through the neck of a colleague in our office kitchen, pushing commuters under the tube tracks. Not like me at all. The last couple of nights, and this has really scared me, I've even dreamed about strangling my wife in her sleep. My memory has been playing tricks on me too. I keep thinking back to that day in the glowworm's caves. Lately, it's all I seem to be thinking about, and remembering what it felt like in the boat, in the darkness. The sense that someone or something had its face pressed up against mine. And then, I start to get this crazy idea that maybe that Japanese lady didn't just put a hand over the side of the boat by accident. That maybe, just maybe, I grabbed her arm in the dark and moved it there. It's a stupid idea, of course. I know I didn't do that. But sometimes, when the anxiety is at its worst, I swear I can remember the feeling of her wrist in my grip, the material of her raincoat, damp under my fingers as I jerked her arm over the side. Mostly, though, I've been thinking about what I saw this morning, what I saw in the bathroom, is what prompted me to get all this down, and what may well prompt me to pack up my things and leave before my wife gets home from work, before anything bad can happen. I'd been shaving at the time. Laura had already left, and I had the house to myself. I was staring into the mirror, moving my razor from my Adam's apple up to my chin, when my hand slipped, cut myself. Blood welled up through the tiny red mouth in my throat, and I had to grab a tissue to stem the flow. When I looked back, I saw him. I saw him in the mirror. For just a split second, I no longer found myself staring at my own brown eyes in the polished glass. I was suddenly staring at two bright blue pinpricks. Those lights stared back at me, like twin glowworms that had burrowed deep in the softer parts of my head. Like glowworms hiding in the dark, monsters in the shadows, waiting to catch their prey. Oh, Jesus. I need to make this itching stop.